this is All About Pets. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. We'll begin today's program with some articles from Catster.com. Our first article today is titled Help for Skittish Kitties by Rita Reimers. You've brought home your new cat home, and she promptly hides under the bed or behind the dresser, only venturing out to eat or use the litter box once everyone has gone to bed. The problem is, if you leave that shy cat to her own devices, she'll probably stay that way and won't bond with you or feel secure in her new home. So how do you encourage your cautious cat to trust and bond with you? With patience and the right approach, these tips will help. Create a safe room. When bringing home your skittish kitty, know that she's feeling overwhelmed by the changes in her life. Start her off in a smaller room, like a bathroom, office, or spare bedroom, to give her time to get accustomed to her new surroundings. If you give her the whole house at once, she may panic and hide behind or under furniture or appliances, and it will take much longer for her to trust her new home. Don't ignore. It's very easy to just let the shy cat do as she pleases, but a shy cat can quickly turn into an aloof feline if left alone all the time. This doesn't mean crawl under the bed with her, but make time to sit beside her hiding place, talk to her in soothing tones, and say her name often. I encourage our sitters at Just for Cats Pet Sitting to sit by the shy cat, talk to her, read their email out loud in a soothing tone, and let her get used to them being nearby. Use bribery. Have a supply of your shy cat's favorite treats with you as you talk to her. Offer her a piece or two, and eventually she'll associate your presence with those yummy goodies. She'll start coming out of her hiding place more and more, establishing a bond with you as you give her what she craves. Eventually, you'll be able to pet or give her a little scratch behind the ears, and she'll begin to interact with you more and hide less. Appeal to her nature. Cats are naturally curious, even when they are in self-protect mode. Use toys that allow you to play with her, yet allow her to keep her distance at first, like fishing pole-type toys, long feathers, and laser pointers. The more she finds that being with you is a fun activity, the more she'll begin to trust. Take time. Let her set the pace of your relationship. If you spend some quality time with her every day, the bond between you will grow. Depending on how skittish your cat is, it could take anywhere from a few days to a couple months before she trusts enough to fully interact with you. Love her. This is perhaps the most important thing. Shy kitties can become the most loyal of cats, but you can't expect them to suddenly break out of their shells and become friendly with everyone in all situations. Shy cats usually let down their guard only for a few select people and in quiet situations. They quickly retreat to their hiding place or safe room when there are new people or loud noises. Giving these wonderfully shy kitties the room to become comfortable with you will allow your shy cat to trust you in her own time. Once she decides you are trustworthy, you'll have a bond that is truly unbreakable. Next, we'll move on to an article in Cat Behavior, Why Do Cats Bring You Gifts? By Susan Logan McCracken. Although I've only had indoor cats for my entire adult life, I grew up with several outdoor cats who earned their weight in paper currency as working cats on my parents' farm. Though these cats were friendly towards humans, I think they would have climbed the curtains if we tried to keep them indoors. But they were sure great at their jobs, catching mice, rats, and moles in particular that shredded my parents' lawn. Our tuxedo cat, Miss Kitty, would wait patiently for a mole to come out of its hole beneath the grass, and she would grab it and bring it to my parents, who praised her for her work. I remember during a garage sale, Miss Kitty brought one of her gifts and dropped it right in front of one of the customer's feet. You can imagine alarm, the shopper expressed. I can't remember anything more, but I'm guessing she never returned to any of our garage sales. Love language. Giving gifts is considered to be one of humans' love languages, a concept made popular by Gary Chapman's best-selling book, The Five Love Languages. Do cats have love languages, and could gift-giving be one of them? Miss Kitty did receive a lot of praise from my parents whenever she brought her prey to them, and I guess you could surmise that she felt love and repeated the behavior. I consulted with board-certified feline veterinarian Gary D. Norsworthy, who owns the Alamo Feline Health Center in San Antonio and has more than 40 years' experience practicing veterinary medicine. The older I get, the more I'm convinced that genetics is a major player in personality traits, Dr. Norsworthy says. I believe this is one example of that. Dr. Norsworthy recounted the story of one of his patients, Rhett, who brought home tree bark, a deflated soccer ball, and a horse's bridle. Rhett's retrieving human began when he was 6 months old, and his humans, a sweet senior couple, gave him treats every time he brought them one of his treasures. Dr. Norsworthy refers to cats who engage in this behavior as retrieving cats. These cats are not trained. They come by it naturally. Their unusual behavior may be increased with rewards, but retrieving cats are often driven to make their owners happy with or without rewards. If you have one of these unique cats, enjoy their special talent. Hunting instinct. All cat species are carnivores and have an instinct to hunt. Among lions, the lionesses hunt for food and bring it to the cubs as a team, while male lions protect the pride. Other feline species are solitary hunters, but the females still share the food with their offspring and teach them to hunt. Feline domestic cats also hunt and bring dead or injured prey home to their offspring to teach them how to hunt. One theory is that spayed females, as they do not have offspring, bring their prey to their humans instead. In other words, they consider their humans as family. You might inadvertently reward this behavior without realizing. If you jump, scamper trying to catch the thing, then give your cat a treat, you just rewarded their behavior. If your cat plops a toy or another object in front of you, he is most likely looking for some playtime. That is a good time to indulge your cat's need to play. Cats are hardwired to play and might even engage in destructive behaviors or have health problems if they don't have enough playtime. Curbing predation. If you're concerned about your cats bringing prey animals into your home, here's how to get them to stop. 1. Keep your cats indoors. Studies show indoor cats live longer. 2. Provide regular playtime. They need the stimulation and exercise. 3. Use food or treat dispensing puzzle toys to simulate hunting followed by eating. 4. Feed a high meat protein diet. Cats need animal protein to thrive. In a recent study, researchers from the University of Exeter in the United Kingdom found that people who provided their cats with a high meat protein grain-free diet and introduced 5 to 10 minutes of play with prey simulating toys each day experienced a 25 to 36% decrease in the number of animals the cats captured and brought home. The researchers concluded that nutrition and playtime were so successful in curbing feline predation that these non-invasive positive methods worked better than impeding their hunting abilities by such measures as adding bells to collars, which they wrote had no discernible effect. The study, provision of high meat content and object play reduced predation of wild animals by domestic cats Felis catus, was published on February 11, 2021 in Current Biology. No matter their reason for bringing you gifts, your cat sees you as family as much as you see them as family. And like you, their basic needs for a healthy life include proper nutrition and exercise. Our final article from Catster magazine for this month's episode is titled Feline Wildfire Victim Finds His Forever Home by Mary Tan. In the fall of 2020, 1,000 animals were rushed to the University of California Davis Veterinary Hospital, thanks to a wildfire in the Sierra Nevada foothills of Northern California. A 2-year-old tabby named Ash arrived with third-degree burns, singed whiskers, and fused toes. For 6 months, he fought for his life, enduring skin grafts, daily wound care, bandage changes, and ringworm. This past March, Ash triumphed, but he needed a forever home. When Ash Ward of Oakland, California, saw the feline up for adoption, she knew he was perfect. She changed his name to Jam and says he has the zoomies and likes to wrestle with his new sibling, Biscuit. UC Davis are thrilled that Jam is now a happy and healthy cat living his life to the fullest. Next, we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, and we'll start with Miss Manners this month. So Victoria Stillwell, this month's article is about integrating a new dog into your family. Integrating a new dog into a household with an existing dog can be tricky. But most dogs successfully ease into the transition if given the right kind of guidance from the start. Peaceful coexistence can be achieved in a number of ways, including monitoring both dogs' behavior, dogs' interactions with each other, and reducing situational and environmental stress. Remove triggers. Before you bring your new dog home, remove any triggers that could create tension between them, such as food, treats, or toys. This will reduce the need for either dog to compete over resources and to avoid location guarding that commonly occurs in multi-dog households. Start outside the home. If you can, introduce your existing dog to the new dog outside and on neutral territory. The more space both dogs have to either interact or put distance between themselves and explore, the better. There are more interesting things to discover outside than in the home, and distractions give both dogs a chance to focus on something else rather than being forced to interact. Keep the dogs on leash until they are comfortable, and then give them some time for off-leash discovery or play before bringing them inside. Give your new dog the chance to discover her new environment with or without the other dog present. Teach a good scenario. If your existing dog is uncomfortable with the new arrival, create a teaching scenario where the new dog's presence means good things happen to your existing dog. Stand in the room with your existing dog and have a friend or family member walk into the room with the new dog. As the dog is brought into the room, give praise, high-value treats, or play the game with your existing dog. Tell your new dog how good she is, too, so that both receive positive attention in the other's presence. Relaxed, fluid body language and willingness to engage in social contact with each other will indicate that the technique has been successful. Keep resources separate. Until you have a clearer picture about how protective they might be over resources, toys, chews, and meals should only be given when the dogs are separated. This can include favorite spots like dog beds. If your new dog is naturally inquisitive, she might want to investigate your existing dog's food bowl or share the toy he is chewing. This will likely cause a disagreement that could escalate into something more serious. It is essential that both dogs feel safe around each other with their resources. Identifying triggers and minimizing stress for them will prevent challenges moving forward. Ease into together time. Walking the dogs together allows them to have positive experiences in each other's presence. The new dog might require less exercise than your existing dog to begin with, but a small walk every day will help build up stamina and increase the bond between them. Start teaching your new dog life skills and cues that she can follow while giving your existing dog a refresher course. Teach each dog separately at first before bringing them to do the exercises together, and be careful that the rewards you use while teaching do not cause tension between them. Manage interactions. Management is equally important to maintain calm, and baby gates are very effective for giving each dog space and time apart, important in any multi-dog household. If your dogs are not comfortable around each other, gates could also have the reverse effect and exacerbate tensions. In this case, put your dogs in separate rooms where they can't see each other and only allow them to interact if they are safe and have a space around them, such as your backyard. Be prepared and stay sensitive. Be prepared for occasional quarrels that happen even between the best of friends. Hopefully, these will be few and far between if you take care not to subject either dog to any situation that causes discomfort. If your existing dog does not adapt to the new dog in time, rehoming options might have to be explored for the new dog. However, this can be avoided if you are diligent in applying all teaching and management procedures so that both dogs can live peacefully together in a stress-free environment. Remember, your existing dog might not have much say in choosing his new friend, so be sensitive to the adjustments he has to make in order to adapt to the changes you will all have to make when you bring a new dog into your home. Next, we'll move on to the Be Fur Active section of Dogster Magazine. And this month, we're going to talk about a new breed of animal control by Lauren Cadams. It takes a village. It's a saying that's applied to inciting social change in cities, raising a child, and fighting viruses. It's also a mindset that helped a municipal animal shelter in Charlotte, North Carolina, receive its first ever no-kill community designation. No shelter can do it without the help of the community, says Melissa Nicely, public information specialist for Charlotte-Mecklenburg Animal Care and Control, ACNC. To achieve the designation, ACNC had to receive a 90% save rate for animals it took in during the year, which can include anything from a dog hoarding case, a pet who's lost his home, or a dangerous loose animal. If it sounds like a great feat, finding a home for 90% of animals that come into the shelter, you're right. According to Best Friends Animal Society, only 37% of all communities with sheltering services have reached a no-kill designation. ACNC, which is a branch of the police department, has been working toward this goal for years, says Melissa, ending 2020 with a 900 countdown campaign that involves support from the local media, partnerships with local rescue groups, and collaborating with an international social media influencer to get as many animals, as close to 900 as possible, adopted. These citywide efforts can be seen across the country as nearly 40 shelters have implemented community-supported programs to help pets out of shelters and reduce euthanasia rates. The initiative is driven by Human Animal Support Services, HASS, a coalition created last year by Texas-based nonprofit American Pets Alive, in an effort to foster the bond between animals and people and transform the way communities interact with their sheltering systems. Here, the AC&C team, which has now set a 92% save goal for 2021, walks us through the programs they put in place to help reach its save rate goal and how other communities can too. Staycation. The team started this temporary foster program 2 years ago to give dogs a break from the commotion at the shelter. Families care for a dog up to 5 days and report back on a postcard about any outings and activities the dog participated in and how she handled them. Not only does the shelter get insight on how the dog behaves in various settings, which helps to make successful adoptions, but about 50% of the dogs ended up being adopted by their foster parents. It's been really helpful with our success, Melissa says. Pre-adoption. There's a 72-hour window after an animal is found before the shelter can spay or neuter or put the animal up for adoption. This can cause a bottleneck situation in the shelter, Melissa explains. It can also increase the chance of kennel diseases spreading among the animals. To speed up the adoption process, AC&C gave people the option of paying the adoption fee before the 72 hours is up so the dog can get spayed or neutered and adopted the same day he becomes legal. Microchip checkpoints. AC&C is working with local pet stores to get microchip scanners installed so lost animals can be scanned as a first resort without having to call the AC&C or a vet. Wellness programs. The team goes into the community and provides dogs with free vaccines, heartworm tests, and preventatives and a microchip. Other discounted and free medical services the shelter plans to implement this year include an internal spay and neuter program, waived adoption fees for senior citizens, discount prescription cards, and flea and tick medications. Melissa says when an owner surrenders an animal because they can't afford to go to the vet, we can offer alternatives. So for more information, you can visit charlottenc.gov and click on the Adopt a Pet link. Pause for this cause. What you can do. Share adoptable dogs on social media. Clicking one button can save a life. Get to know your municipal shelter. City animal control can get a bad reputation. Help spread the word that just like other shelters, the goal is to reunite animals with their owners. Advocate in your community. Spread the word about HASS's mission and encourage your community shelter to get involved. We're continuing on the adoption theme today with an article titled Adoption Today by Arden Moore. The latest info to help you get successfully adopt a great new fur family member. The process involved in adopting a dog has certainly evolved during the past nearly 200 years, but what remains steadfast in people from the 1800s to today is the desire to protect animals and to embrace that feeling of love when their search leads them to find and adopt the dog. I know that feeling. 5 years ago, and after more than a year-long search, I found Kona. She was a shy terrier mix in a kennel run at the Rancho Coastal Humane Society in Escondido, California. Her bio stated she was friendly and definitely needed a home with other dogs. She saw me, quietly got up, and pressed her body against the front of the cage. She then gave my hand a gentle kiss. No words can describe that instant connection we both felt, a feeling many of you know in your adoption quests. Kona aced every temperament test I gave her at the shelter, including a biggie, must love cats. Kona loves and respects cats, and today she is an AKC, Canine Good Citizen, a certified therapy dog, and my four-legged assistant in my pet first aid and pet behavior classes, and she's my best friend. So she was worth the long search. I look bad at adoptions. Today, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic hit in 2020, adoptions are on the rise at public and private animal shelters all over. This begs the question, when and where was the first animal welfare society in the world? Historical records indicate that the first started in England. A group of men wanting to protect animals from cruelty met at an old slaughter's coffee house in London on June 16, 1824, to take steps to create the Society for the Protection of Animals. The group struggled financially and politically until 1837, when the future Queen Victoria became a patron. When she became queen, it became the Royal Society for the Protection of Animals. That promoted interest among owners, others to form ways to protect animals in other British towns. By the turn of the century, animal protection societies were created in neighboring Germany, Austria, France, Belgium, and Holland. Today, the RSPCA, rspca.org.uk, is the world's largest and oldest animal welfare charity. Its primary missions are to rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome animals in England and Wales. And for you dogged history fans, the first such society created in the United States was in 1866 in New York City. While working as a diplomat in Russia in 1863, a New Yorker named Henry Berg intervened and stopped a carriage driver from beating his fallen horse. It made such a major impact on Henry that he quit his diplomatic post, returned to New York, and founded the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA.org, in 1866. Pet rescue and shelter programs have changed dramatically through the years, with many firsts and incredible contributions aimed at finding all homeless pets their forever home. Dogstar has created a timeline recognizing these major contributions, which we will continue to update. Check out the history of dog adoption and rescue in the United States on dogstar.com. Today's adoption options are many. Returning to the present day, there are so many more ways to adopt a dog who needs a home, which include booking an appointment at your local animal shelter rescue, going to your county animal care and choosing from found dogs now available for adoption, attending a local pet adoption meet and greet event, contacting a breed-specific or size-specific rescue group, rescuing a stray dog in the streets, taking in a dog from a family member or neighbor no longer able to care for them, finding a match online at various adoption sites all over the globe. There's also an option to first agree to foster a dog and assess how the both of you are bonding in your home before making the call to permanently adopt. People who do this often sheepishly describe themselves as foster failures, but in reality, these are foster successes because they took the time to make sure the match works for them and the dogs. There are also nonprofit groups led by people like Carla Naden. She founded Animal Synergy in San Diego in 2013. This is a rescue, rehabilitation, and sanctuary for dogs and other companion animals who are seniors, have special medical or physical issues, or who are terminally ill. We are the voice for the most vulnerable and misunderstood animals in our shelter system and society, says Carla. Inspired by a shelter dog named Nugget facing euthanization at a shelter, he changed my life and I will work in honor of his memory every day. Be patient. It's a process. At shelter and rescue groups, expect to fill out plenty of forms. There will be questions about your dog history, current pets and children in the home, whether you rent or own, and other areas. The organizations ask these questions to reduce the chance of the dog having to be returned back to the adoption center. You may also have to do meet and greets, both at the rescue and then a later home visit, where you and your family have an opportunity to spend time with the dog. There may be a home inspection to make sure you are who you say you are, and not a reseller or someone who wants the dog for something like dog fighting. Ensure that there's a fenced yard, there are no pet hazards. The organization may do a reference check, particularly with your current veterinarian if you have one. Your veterinarian will be able to assure them that your current pets are all up to date on their vaccines, medication, and annual checkups, and your future dog will get the same kind of great care. There is also usually an adoption fee. This helps offset the cost of the shelter for microchipping, spaying, neutering, taking care of health issues, and more. Sometimes the adoption fee is reduced, particularly if the dog is a senior or is special needs, waived for a special purpose. Research the organization before you start the adoption process so you know what to expect from it and what it will expect from you. Once you finish the process, you'll have to sign an adoption contract. Besides agreeing to basic care, you may be asked to spay or neuter your new pet if that hasn't happened yet. Promise to notify the rescue if the dog ever has to be rehomed so the organization can do it. Guarantee that you'll take the dog to the veterinarian within a certain amount of time to complete any vaccinations, and sometimes even promise to take the dog, particularly a puppy, to training classes. Time for doggy school. Okay, you've sealed the deal. You adopted a dog. Once the honeymoon period ends, you'll discover your dog is, well, not a perfect dog. His previous experiences, living situation, time at the shelter has shaped him. He may be slow to being house-trained, insist on chewing your shoes, or not master basic doggy obedience cues like sit or stay. When adopting a dog, it's good to idea to have a trainer assess him if there's any issues or creating a training program for you. Or even have the trainer help you prepare for the arrival of the new dog, going over things like the potty area, where will he spend his time, dog-proofing the house, basic training, and introductions to other members of the household like children and other pets. Help is also available at reputable dog training centers. The most common issue we see is reactivity towards other dogs, says Maureen Patton, founder and certified professional dog trainer at What a Great Dog in Frisco in Richardson, Texas. A good training program can make all the difference with helping your new dog integrate smoothly into your family. Her center works closely with several shelter and rescue groups in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. No matter where you live or how much dog knowledge you have, consider enrolling in a training program, Maureen urges. Look for a trainer who's certified with a reputable organization and one that uses the most current training methodologies that include behavior science and using positive outcomes to modify your dog's behavior. A member of your family. The adoption process takes much time and effort, but it's all worth it in the end. During my own adoption search, I kept the words of America's family veterinarian, Dr. Marty Becker, in my head. Take your time, pick with purpose. Don't choose a dog by looks alone. Pick a dog who fits you and your lifestyle. After all, you'll probably have this dog longer than your current job, your current residence, your current car, and maybe even your current relationship. They want to just highlight a few of the nonprofit rescue organizations to wag about. They're saying the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, which is at aspca.org. And Best Friends Animal Society, which is bestfriends.org, and the North Shore Animal League America, which is animalleague.org. Let's just read a little bit about Best Friends. In 1984, Best Friends created the largest no-kill animal sanctuary in the nation and a national movement to end the killing of companion animals. Today's national goal is No-Kill 2025. Working collaboratively with more than 3,200 Best Friends Network partners, shelters, rescue groups, spay-neuter organizations, and animal welfare organizations across the country to end Selkirk killings in 2025. The sanctuary in Kanab, Utah, is a home between home for around 1,600 rescued animals at any given time. Best Friends advocates for pets and people on local, state, and national levels. And they have a unique national animal event. In 1966, Strut Your Mutt launches, now a national multi-million dollar fundraiser benefiting shelters and rescues around the country. Annual Best Friends National Conference, first called the No More Homeless Pets National Conference, was created in 2001, which allows welfare leaders and support from across the country to network and gain knowledge and the latest techniques to save the lives of homeless pets. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. We'll be right back.